Accession number 27065, Mr. James Blackburn, Reel 4. We were talking about when you got to with the 74th Field and you'd got to El Adam Airfield, and we were just picking up a few questions. Now, what was, did you actually dig in there? What was happening at El Adam?
No, we just carried on sort of routine, really. We didn't do a lot. It was difficult to describe. We were there until Christmas, because we had our Christmas dinner in the middle of the desert.
Now tell me about that, because that's the sort of thing that you know. I mean,
well, they made. I'm talking about these square petrol tins. Well, they got hundreds of those and made a great long table in the middle of nowhere, and put these sort of paper cloths over it. It must have been, goodness me, 100 yards long, I think, probably more. And we all sat down to Christmas dinner in the middle of the desert.
And what did you get?
Well, I think we had turkey, actually. I think we did. Yeah. And another thing we used to have, there was a concert party. It was the regimental concert party. They were very good. You know, they had female impersonators.
Even at El Adam and things
like
that. Yes. Well, tell us about that. We're very interested. Tell us about the concert party.
Yeah. There were, they used to sing. They'd sing songs. In fact, that was the first time I heard White Christmas. This chap sang White Christmas. That was the first time we'd heard it. And there was a comic, you know, a comedian. He was quite good. And, you know, various other artists.
Female impersonators.
There was a female, she was very good, yeah. Yes, she was. They did things, you know, involving women, but it really was good. It was very good.
And did the officers serve you at the meal? You know, the
yes, they did. They did, yes. That's right. Yes, they did. And the sergeants, you know, the officers and the sergeants and the servers all sitting there at this long table. That's just me.
And when you were out there, would you get your post? Tell us about, you know, both ways, going, you writing home to your family and letters coming out, parcels. Tell us about that.
They came very regularly. They were very good. It was very good, yes.
Was it important to you?
Oh, yes, it certainly was, yes. My mother and father used to write on a regular basis. And
what would they write about to you? I mean, do you see what I mean?
Well, yes, they would. Well, they would write about what was happening in the village, which I would know about, you see. All the various activities that father was involved with, told me about that. And if they'd been playing tennis or whatever. And of course, after Alamein, they wrote and said how they'd rung the church bells, you see, and everything was going swimmingly.
Would your uncle write to you?
Yes, my uncle did write to me from here. I've still got it. Just the one letter I ever had from him. And I've still got it somewhere.
Would he write about the farm or what?
Yes, he did. Yes, that's all he wrote about. About the.
Was that what you wanted to hear in the
desert? Oh, yes, certainly, yes. Yes, it was, you know, it sort of kept your feet on the ground. And
anybody else writing to you?
Well, I had a girlfriend, sort of. And she used to write.
What about parcels? Did you get any parcels from home sent out to you?
I don't remember parcels, no.
Now, what would you write back to them? You know, do you see what I mean?
Well,
would you write about the war or would you not write about the war? You know, what did you write?
I used to... I didn't write about the war, really, no. But I used to write... compose letters. It was a matter of sort of... if you were writing a letter, I sort of thought how I could compose the letter, not so much giving them information about what was going on, although I remember once writing that I'd been in Benghazi, and when I saw it, when I got back, it had all been crossed out, you know, it had a blue pencil through it. But one chap called Brenton, he was always moaning about the food. And he used to write to his wife complaining bitterly about this food, not because his wife wanted to know about it, but the censoring officers would read it and perhaps do something about it. I think that was behind, that was his idea. Seemed ridiculous to me, because his wife must have thought they were having a terrible time with the food. But he admitted it. He said, I'm not writing. He said, I'm getting it to the notice of the people who might change things. Censors, you know, they used to censor the letters.
Did you mind them reading your letters?
No, not really, no. Of course, you could, if you didn't want them to read it, your personal officers, you had a green envelope, and you could stick it in that, and whether they opened them or not, I don't know, but they were liable to open them, so you wouldn't be thinking you'd get away with it by writing it in this green envelope.
That'd be for more personal things.
Yes, that's right.
That you didn't people, want your
people
actual
didn't,
officer.
Didn't want your officer, perhaps, to read, you know. And I remember one of the officers saying, I think they were having a laugh about one or two of the letters, and he said, I don't agree with that. He said, I don't read them as such. I just skim through it to see if there's any information and it shouldn't be there. He didn't actually read it and take it in. But I think someone did, you see, and they would be quite interested in it. But there we go. No, that's right, he could get round it with the green envelope.
So you were at El Adam for Christmas.
Yeah.
What's the next move?
Well, then we moved up to near Benghazi. And what I remember about that was it snowed one night. And all little mushrooms came up, millions of them, all over the sort of desert after this snow. Of course, we'd changed into battle dress by this time. It was too cold. And
were you surprised when it snowed?
I was, yeah. Yes, I didn't expect it.
Did it settle? I mean, how
much? No, not really. Well, it settled for a while. You could see it was snow, but it soon disappeared. As I say, the moisture must have promoted these mushrooms, because there were millions of them came up. Yeah. Yeah. But we were sort of moving up by this
did
time.
Did you go into Benghazi?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
What do you think of that? I mean,
well, it was just, it's not much of a place, really. There was an airfield there, of course.
Now, how was your duty? You know, you were the driver of your...
Yeah.
Would you be always attached to one gun?
Yes.
Was you?
Yes.
Tell us a bit about that. How did you get on with your gun team? Were you actually part of the gun team? I mean, do you see what I mean? How did you relate with them?
Well, we sort of were a little unit, really. I mean, you knew each. But for the life of me, I cannot think of the names now, you know, apart from Sergeant Patterson. He was in charge of the gun. He used to stand at the side of me, because there was a lid in the roof, you see. He could stand with his head out of the top. And Tommy Patterson, he was a nice chap, he was. He was Geordie from South Shields, you know. And I was thinking this morning, I cannot think of the names of the other.
How many would there be?
There were three, you see. There were three sitting behind me on the three seats there. Then there was me driving and the sergeant standing in this, or sitting down if he wanted to. Of course, there was a winch on it as well. You had a long cable on this winch, and the thing with eight holes in it, eight big pegs. So if you got stuck anywhere, you stuck this in the ground and winched yourself out with it. And we had to use it once or twice when we got to the Marath line.
So you were Sergeant Tommy Patterson's that was your thing, you were always with him.
That's right, yeah.
And so who would anyone help? I mean, when you had a long drive, would any of them help you and do a bit of driving?
No,
or was
no.
It always you?
No, no. No, nobody ever drove it apart from me. Yeah.
So if you were on an all-night drive, you had to do it?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Now, so what happened next then?
Well, we moved up to towards Marath, the Marath line, and there must have been a lot of heavy rain because quite a few of them got bogged down. And we spent up all night one night, mine for some reason. I don't think I looked much sandbags, so many sandbags in mine, so it didn't get bogged down, and I think the others had. And I had to keep pulling them out to get these guns up to into position for the Marath Line battle. But we got there by early morning.
This would be March, wouldn't it?
Yes, that's right, it was March. Yes. And I remember the officer coming back and saying, well, he'd seen a map of the positions of the enemy, and he said, I don't know how we're going to break through here. And the following day, I think it was the New Zealanders, had gone round the flank attack and broken through, so encircled behind Rommel's forces, and we broke through. We got through fairly quickly in the end. But
then what?
Well, then we went on to into Tunisia, past Gafsa. I was thinking about Gafsa because there was a fertiliser. A chap used to come around selling fertiliser for the farm, and he said it's called Gafsa, that it comes from Africa. I said, I was there one time, so I never thought I'd have to buy it. But we went past there, got as far as Infidaville, as I say, and we were in position there shelling for a while.
So still you hadn't actually been under fire at this stage?
Not really.
Not Daraa, I mean there's shells in the area, but
yes.
your area hadn't been shelled?
No, we hadn't, we were very lucky, yes.
So at Infidaville you were part of the bombardment, I mean?
Yes, we did, and then we got word that we were being pulled out and going back to Egypt for the next invasion, wherever that was going to be. So we set off back down this road.
Now tell us about this, because that's a phenomenally long journey.
Well, there it is, yes. First two or three signposts were little stones like we used to have, you know. Cairo, 3,800 kilometres. Oh dear. But it just shows what the engines had suffered, because I used to get a 5-gallon drum of oil in the morning and fill the engine up with oil. And by the end of the day, I'd used 5 gallon of oil. So the piston rings must have been, it must have been slapping about like the oil must have been coming out as fast as the petrol.
But, I mean, were they actually breaking down, or were they keeping...
No, they didn't break down, but they were obviously on the verge of wearing out.
With all that oil bit, did the fumes come into the cab?
Well, no, of course there were no windows. It wasn't as though we were in an enclosed space, but it would avoid us.
Anything happen on the trip?
No, not really. We used to stop, have a lunch, tiffin at the usual time, and I don't know how many miles a day we did, 60 or 70 perhaps, something like that, and got back to Alexandria eventually. And of course we had to be...
And this is April?
Yes, it would be, yes, that's all right. End of April. Then we were totally re-equipped.
Now, what were you re-equipped with?
Well, new vehicles, new quads, obviously. I mean, they were clapped out completely. And before we left, we buried loads and loads of shells in the desert. Dug pits and buried these shells.
Now, why did you do that?
Well, so we didn't have to carry them back with us. It seems strange, doesn't it? Simply to lighten the load. I bet they're still there. You know.
So you weren't supposed to do it?
Well, I wouldn't have thought so, but we were ordered to do it, so that was it.
So it was a junior command thing?
Possibly, but it was done. Yeah.
Did you mark where you buried them? Or?
No, well, I didn't. We didn't. I don't know whether.
How many are we talking about? I mean, hundreds?
Hundreds, yeah. I mean, loads and loads of these shells, because it didn't.
Who would carry them normally? They wouldn't be on your quad, would they?
No, they were. We had a sort of ammunition wagon full of these. They're like square, well, oblong tins with lids on. And there were four shells in each, you see. We took all these shells out and buried them in the desert. Seems ridiculous, doesn't it? Because, I mean, they would have to be re-equipped when we got back to Alexandria.
Now, you got brand new equipment, and what happened at Alexandria? Were you there long, or...?
Well, we went on, more or less straight away, onto this ship.
Do you know which one?
Well... It just had a number. There were two ships, the S-17 and the S-18. And the S-17 was what we were on. And the S-18, the other half of the regiment was on that.
Now, what was the S-17? It wasn't a landing ship tank?
I think they were Liberty ships. Yeah.
And how did you get your stuff aboard? I mean,
it was loaded on.
Did you drive it on, or was it loaded?
No, it was loaded on with cranes in Alexandria Harbour. And while I was there, because I couldn't swim at the time, but I thought, oh, we're going on this invasion, I'll try and learn to swim. Well, we were in about 60 feet of water, you see, in the Alexandria Harbour. But there was a platform level with the water's edge. So I went down there and sort of hung onto this platform in one hand and paddled about with the other hand. Till I realised how simple it was, you know, that there was nothing to swimming at all. You know, once you lose your fear of sinking, you're okay. So I learned to swim, and after about a week, I swam right across the bay. There was a ship the other side I could see in the distance with something at the side of it, and I thought, well, I couldn't make out what it was that had got down in the water beside it, so I swam across there. And of course, things on water look closer than what they are, and it must have been well over half a mile, I should think, to this ship. Anyway, I made it. All it was a sort of lighter with all ashes and stuff in it, refuse, you know, and swam back again. So I thought, well, if the ship gets sunk in Sicily, at least I've got one more chance. I was rather pleased with that.
Now, how long were you on board the S-17?
Well, about a month. Well, it was July the 7th or 8th, or 10th perhaps, when we set off to Sicily. And of course...
What do you remember of the trip across?
Well, it was flat as a mill pond. Absolutely calm. And when we could see the... tracer bullets, the ACAC and everything going when we got fairly near to Sicily. And we'd plastered all the vehicles up with this boss stick, you know, if we had to drive.
Now, tell us about that, because we're interested. This is the waterproofing, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, that's right.
Tell us how exactly you'd done it. And
well, what you
was
did.
Was it really boss stick? I mean, you know.
No, it was a kind of plastic, and you had to cover all the plugs with this stuff completely. And stick a long pipe on the air intake to the carburetor, you see. Because if the water came over it, you see, it would stop. But it was, the idea was that we were going to drive up the beach, you see, offload onto a barge or something and drive up the beach. But when we got to Sicily, were waiting offshore. And
what could you see from, I mean, were you on deck or were you down below?
Yes, we were on deck. We couldn't see a lot going off, but they captured Syracuse. And in the end, we just docked in Syracuse and offloaded on the quayside. But before that, while we were waiting offshore, there were just those two ships, the 17 and 18, and about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, a single aeroplane came across, all at once, swooped down on the other ship, the S-18, and dropped a bomb, smacked me on the funnel, you know, perfect it was as far as he was concerned. And that was it. Just blew up. So there was half the regiment gone, just in a flash. You know. So we were sort of sitting on deck, thinking it might happen to us at any time.
I mean, were there any survivors?
No, I don't think there were. Well, there were a few on deck. There was a gun crew at the front. They swung round and fired at this plane, because it had gone by then. But I mean, just one single plane suddenly appeared about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, swooped down and loosed his bomb, and it fell just bullseye right down the funnel, you know, and they'd probably be downstairs having their tiffin, you know, down under in low deck.
Did that affect the half of the unit going?
It was, it was the officer, James, a chap called James, we used to call him Jimmy James. He said, Mr. Bainbridge and Cochrane on there. That was that. So when I came off, when we actually came off, I went to join the other, the 440 battery.
So tell me about the landing at Syracuse. Was there any trouble at all about that?
There wasn't really. It was a bit scary, but
in what way?
Well, we were offloading at night, and they had all these arc lights fixed up, you know, in the middle of the night, and I was expecting an air raid any time. You know,
that would be in your mind at the time.
Yes, because we were right down at the bottom of the hold. My quad actually was they couldn't start the others. I suppose this Bostic had got wrong somewhere. They wouldn't start anyway, so mine would. So I was driving, pulling the others into position to be lifted out, and eventually got them off. But when you're at the bottom of the hold, you know, arc lights everywhere, and it was a bit hair-raising. Anyway, nothing happened, so we got them all off, and I was then attached to 440 battery.
Which troop were them?
I can't remember, to be honest. No.
Were you with a troop, though? I mean, you weren't with an
aircraft. Oh, yes, I was with a troop.
With a gun crew again?
Yes.
Do you remember who your gun sergeant was?
No, I can't. No, I can't.
Now, how did they rebuild the battery? Because there's almost nobody left, or if anybody. So how did they rebuild the battery? Was it just...
Well, I don't
know. Was it
really
half
know.
From your battery?
Yes,
half drafts?
Yes, some of them, yes. I think Tom Parker came with me. And, yes, I'm not sure how they managed it, to be honest.
Was the unit kept out of action in view of this, or did you go into action?
No, went into action straight away.
So tell me about that.
We were in among the olive groves. They were all, you never saw anything like it. There was fig trees, olive trees, lemon trees, and loads of tomatoes. You know, they had the terraced, it was all volcanic soil, and the terraces of tomato, and all these, you could sit eating, there were little grape bushes, you could sit eating grapes off these bushes, fantastic. But The trouble was, of course, the guns were in among all this volcanic soil, and when you fired, the gunners got covered in it, and they looked like coal miners after three or four rounds.
Where were you? Were you just outside Syracuse or further?
Yeah, we were to start with. Yeah. And we moved up the east coast.
How did it compare to desert fighting for you? I mean, what, you know, just generally for you?
Well, I mean,
it's very different.
The conditions were so totally different. I mean, there were women about, for one thing. I mean, there were civilians. And all this fruit, a proper Garden of Eden it was, you know, you could have anything you wanted, really. But it was very primitive, you know, there didn't seem to be any proper sanitation.
How did you get on with the Sicilian, well, Italians, how did you get on with them?
Oh, they were all right, yeah, they were fine, very friendly, yeah.
How did they show it? I mean, because they were meant to be the enemy, I mean...
Well, they were at the time, weren't they, but I don't think the heart was in it. I don't know, they were just friendly, that's all, you know. They didn't...
They weren't surly at all, though?
Not at all, no. No, no, no. They were very friendly. I remember one chap coming up, a little fella, and he had a big case full of medals that he'd won in some campaign somewhere. He says, "I'm a tiger of Tuscany." Yeah, it was funny.
And you treated them well as well?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, I didn't regard them as the enemy anyway. It was the Germans we were bothered about.
Now, any incidents you remember from Sicily? Because, you know, it's a funny campaign. It's a lot of advancing. And
yeah, yeah.
Do you remember anything in particular from it?
No, the only thing I remember was that... somebody said that Verity, the cricketer, had been wounded just in the next unit, I think he was. And of course he died. You won't remember him. He was a spin bowler, wasn't he? And he's buried in Italy, I think, now.
With your love of cricket, that actually made an impact.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Left arm, wasn't he?
Yes, left arm bowler, yes.
But he was very well known.
Oh, yes, he was. Yes, he was a captain, I think.
But so was, that hit home?
He was, yes, it did. He was badly wounded. Somewhere near where we were. And I think he died, he'd taken to hospital in Italy or somewhere there, and died. Hmm.
So anything else happened in Sicily, you recall?
Well, after the fighting was over, we went
to... So the fighting for you, just dropping into action?
Yeah.
Nothing particularly right. Much happening to you?
No.
Dropping into action?
No, we weren't in any trouble again, really. We were rather fortunate, weren't we? As I always said about the artillery, as long as you're winning, you're okay. You see, it's when the enemy get the upper hand that the artillery come in for it, like at Gazala, where they had to retreat, and the guns had to stay behind, and the infantry came back through them, and they were sort of sitting ducks. But if you win him, well, that's a totally different matter. Mm.